Welcome to Gleaming the Tube, the podcast where Kevin and Mike watch a film in which somebody rides a skateboard at some point. Finally, a podcast where people talk about movies.
Hello, Michael.
Hello, Kevin.
Minding the Gap is a 2018 documentary film directed by Bing Liu, which chronicles the lives and friendships of three young men growing up in Rockford, Illinois, united by their love of skateboarding. And Michael and I watched this movie, and before we get into it, I do want to give, we don't normally do this, but I do want to give a quick content warning. This movie and probably this discussion gets into some sort of heavy stuff, particularly around domestic violence. So if we touch on that, and if that is something you do not want to listen to a podcast where that may come up, then I strongly suggest you go back and listen to our episode about We Are the World again.
Yes.
But this time we're talking about Minding the Gap, and holy shit, did I love this movie.
I thought it was great. It was super powerful, really well done.
Basically, the genesis of this movie seems to be the director, Bing Liu, the sense I got and from interviews was that in the skate crew that he grew up in, he was the videographer.
Yes.
And I think he had all of this footage of himself and the kids in his town skateboarding, like the skateboard kids when they were younger. And then when he set out initially to make a documentary just about like skateboarders talking about their lives. And then he honed in on these two guys from his hometown, Zach and Keir, and it started to become about them and, you know, their sort of transition into adulthood as, you know, people who are heavily into skateboarding. Zach has a baby with someone named Nina, and Nina kind of becomes another main character in the movie. And then Bing, sort of the director, becomes a character in the movie as well, especially once the movie starts to get into the trauma that the other two start talking about. I think Keir at one point talks about how his dad used to physically, I think he says something like, well, nowadays we call it child abuse.
Which was a very affecting line.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So then Bing starts to like draw himself in as a character and starts interviewing his mom about his experiences and his brother. And it like, as I said, it gets into some really heavy stuff, but it's also never didactic. It has a real clear-eyed view of characters. I feel like it gets into like what it means to grow up in America.
Yep.
These days, like it's one of those movies that's about a lot without hitting you over the head with it. It's not like this is the message. And I think one of the reasons Bing Liu added himself as a character in the film is, you know, he talked about, there's a scene where he's talking to Keir and he says, well, I saw myself in what you were going through. And I think he didn't want it to be a situation where he made the stuff with Zach and especially Keir about his own shit. He wanted it to be about them. So he's like, well, I'm going to bring myself in and, you know, talk to my mom about our shit growing up and like the way my stepfather used to physically abuse me.
You know, I kept thinking as I was watching it, it's like a film about how those things perpetuate themselves in different ways. And it's interesting because through the lens of skateboarding, that's kind of one of the interesting things about skate culture is you kind of nailed it. There's always one of the, you know, you hang around, the thing that brings you together as a crew of friends is the commonality of skateboarding. And then there's always the kid who sort of becomes the observer. And maybe they are not the most talented on a board, but they start becoming an auteur and they start filming their friends. And it is interesting to think that while you're filming your friends having fun and riding your skateboards, you're also filming yourselves growing up. And you're also seeing how, for some people, skateboarding is like therapy. And for some people, it's just a pastime and an outlet. And for other, you know, and so there's all these sort of archetypes that play out really cleanly in this documentary where, you know, you've got these kids and they're all legitimately in pain, and how they sort of deal with the pain and with the trauma that they're going through it kind of shows up in the way that they approach skateboarding. It just sort of reveals itself through the footage. And as you're watching it unfold, it really is really, really affecting to see how these different kids are sort of dealing with the trappings of where they grew up and how they grew up. I was very moved by the film. I got to be honest.
Me too. And it takes place in Rockford, Illinois, which is, as the film portrays, not a city on the move.
Right.
It reminded me a little bit of Woonsocket.
It absolutely did. Yes. It could have been very easily filmed in Woonsocket, Rhode Island.
And, there are all these towns in America that were, had like manufacturing hubs that were once like textile mills, and they're just dying cities now that are depressing places to be. And it captures that like really effectively. The stuff with the Zach character and his girlfriend Nina, and they have a baby, and you see like they're both very young when they have this kid,
right?
And they do not seem prepared for it, and you kind of see their relationship over a few years where they break up, they get back together, and it comes out that Zach has a drinking problem and is physically abusive towards Nina. Event like she reveals it and she asks Bing not to say anything, and you can tell there's a long period where he doesn't, and then he just asks Zach about it like near the end of the film, and in like probably the most chilling moment, Zach sort of justifies it, and
right.
You're just like, oh, it was really painful to watch,
right?
But then that immediately cuts to Bing interviewing his mom and his mom talking about how she was with someone who assaulted her, and how she didn't want to be alone, and how he was nice sometimes. And that's one of the best edits in the film. I mean, one of the things I think that this film has going for it is the editing is next level.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
I started my career as an editor, and I am by no means at the level of being able to edit something like this movie, but I am at least able to recognize like, holy shit, this is a well-edited movie.
Right. Right. Well, and you almost get the sense that like, it's that, like I said, the theme of how it perpetuates itself and the theme of how one moment he's sweet. And then, that comes out of Nina's mouth and out of Bing's mom's mouth. One moment he's sweet. The next moment he's a different person. It's all in the past, but if you want to talk about this, maybe it'll help.
Or there's stuff about sort of how the cycles perpetuate themselves and how the cliche is hurt people hurt people, and how it's heavily implied that Zach dealt with the same thing when he was growing up.
Yes.
That,
yeah.
He's perpetuating this, and how do you break those cycles? And you don't get the sense that Kira or Bing do. I thought it was handled in like a really honest way.
Yeah. Yes.
It doesn't forgive anybody anything, but it also doesn't turn into a polemic.
Right.
And which I think is more powerful, which is like not even getting into all the stuff. The Kier character, who is black, like there's a whole bunch of stuff about race with him.
Yeah.
And how most of his friends, like, because in the skateboarding scene in Rockford, like most of his friends are white, and how he navigates that, and how they don't understand. Like at one point he talks about how he has to keep his license and registration like on his dashboard, because when he gets pulled over, if he opens his glove box, he's afraid of getting shot. And
right.
He's like, I can't talk about this with my friends. They don't understand it.
Well, there's two scenes that really magnify that. It's the scene. There's a scene where they're all hanging around and they're playing some video with the prodigious use of the N-word, and they're all laughing about it. And you can see he's, an amazing job of editing it. The camera goes over to him and he's just like, and then there's also the scene.
Yeah, he doesn't say anything but his facial expression.
Yeah. And then there's the other scene where he's kind of, later on in the film, he's hanging out with some younger kids, and that kid goes on that sort of unfortunate, rant about you know, white privilege or whatever. And it's, and, you know, and I thought it was really cool that they kind of take him to task on that a little bit. And like, what the, you know, what are you fucking talking about? But yeah, it's this other level of shit that he's trying to deal with. The Kier character is in so much pain in this movie that it's like, and again, it's like, so you see the way that it sort of manifests itself in the way that he skates. He's in, you know, we've talked a little bit about this podcast about the idea of certain skaters having touch. I use that word touch, and he has got it. And it's really interesting that he says it towards the end of the movie where like, that's the one of the hardest things about skateboarding is that it can be absolutely this like this safe space, but it can also make you so angry. And the hard thing about it is this, you know, when you're skateboarding just for the physical act of riding a skateboard, it can be so therapeutic. But when you're trying to get granular with it and do perform a certain trick, it only escalates the angrier you get, the less likely it is that you're going to be in control and do the trick, and the angrier it makes you, and the more you're likely to smash your own skateboard. And so watching it through the lens of a skateboarder, I could see where like all you want when you're having a tough time is to go out and skate and make everything better. But then sometimes skateboarding is a harsh mistress. You know what I mean?
I did want to ask you about the skateboarding in this movie, because we've done a few documentaries about skateboarding, but they've mostly been about either, you know, the superstars of the skateboarding world. It's, you know, the Bones Brigade or Gator. And obviously like these kids are not the Bones Brigade and Gator. Like these are just kids who love skateboarding.
Right.
And I wanted to like, to me, it seemed like, and it does mention at the end that Kier gets sponsored at the end, which was kind of a nice button because it's not brought up as sort of a, usually the plots for skateboarding movies are like, I want to get sponsored. But it's never brought up as sort of a goal of his. But what did you think like watching them skate? Did you just think like, these are skateboarders that I would know? Or
it's an interesting question because I will tell you that they were really good skateboarders, and good in a way that a little bit after my time being a very involved and active skateboarder, something weird happened where everybody got really good. And I don't know if it was because the proliferation of, there's a lot of things that happened where all of a sudden everybody became a lot more technically proficient at skateboarding. So I don't know that I would say that compared to other kids contemporary to 2018 that they were superstar good, but they were really good skateboarders. All the footage of them skating, they were what I would consider like very, very proficient at skateboarding. And I think Kier was the standout from the very beginning of the film. I was like, oh, this kid is the one who's got some real potential. But I also liked that it was like the narrative. I thought the documentary was going to be about a group of kids trying to get sponsored skateboarding and kind of like a Hoop Dreams thing.
Because that's the plot of all of these things.
And so as it started unfolding, I realized like, no, that's kind of, that's like a background thing. It made it more interesting to watch. And then when it was revealed at the end that that kid picks himself up, gets himself out of that, you know, there's the scene where he's really pissed off that his brother stole his money. He knows that environment is, you know, maybe he realizes that environment is only going to sort of envelop him a little bit more. And so he just gets out of Dodge. And at that, even that part of the story, I was even surprised that it wasn't that he decided to move to like LA, like a skate city, that he just moved to Denver. But then he got a shop sponsorship. And it made it even more sweet that was just sort of an epitaph. Like, oh, by the way, you've been watching how good this kid is at skating, and it is starting to sort of pay off. But it's not paying off in a way that I think he's going to be a skateboarding superstar. I think it's going to pay off in a way that he'll just get some free product and keep skating and, you know, build a little life for himself that I don't necessarily think is going to be completely revolved around skateboarding, but it's going to certainly be part of his life for quite a while. There's that scene where he's trying to do a trick. It's earlier in the film. He's trying to do a trick like off of a porch onto a little like ledge. And when he lands a trick, I was like, well, that was like a skate video worthy trick. Like he rolled away from that, and their reaction where they all cheer. I was like, yeah, that was real skateboarding right there. That kid has what I call the touch. And I thought it was really cool to watch. And I also thought it was cool to watch that. Like, I thought it was interesting that Zach had like a family connection to skateboarding and was also clearly a really good skateboarder, but kind of in a different way. He was a sort of a, it was like he was letting out his aggressions on a skateboard. And in a way I almost felt like it couldn't sustain itself because the decisions or lack of decisions that he made in his the rest of his life were going to make it so that he was only ever going to, you know, by that, I think by 2024, he probably doesn't touch a skateboard almost at all, you know?
Well, it's like one of the other themes of this movie was you see these characters who were like friends at the beginning and they slowly drift apart. One gets the sense that the only reason Bing is still in touch with him is he's making a documentary about him.
Right, right, right.
And Keir and Zach stop hanging out altogether. I think Keir says at one point, like, you know, we're up to different stuff. I started hanging out with people my own age.
Yeah. And isn't that sort of a thing that happens? Like whether you're looking at it through the lens of skateboarding or not, I mean, Kevin, it's not like you're in regular contact with people you've known since you were 15 years old. You know, that's not the way that story ends, you know? But it's funny that like I said in the beginning, you know, skateboarding brings these people together, and like sometimes you become actually friends. You know, you have your punk rock friends and your actual friends, or your Dungeons and Dragons friends and your actual friends. And then it's the same thing with skateboarding. I am in contact with some of the people that I grew up skateboarding with, but sometimes the only value that you share is the skateboarding. And then people kind of grow up and grow out of it. And it's like a miracle if you're friends with one of the people you were friends with when you were 15, never mind five or six of them, right? You know,
I'm mate for life, Michael.
like swans, Kevin. We are mates for life. Oh, that was nice.
And Nina, who is has the baby with Zach, and they stop being a couple. She has to she has to go to court to get Zach to pay child support. Zach, I mean, at a certain point in this movie, Zach is like a real class A fuck up.
Yeah.
You know, he's drinking too much. He can't get a job. He's not paying child support. He's not seeing his kid. You know, you feel for Nina too, because she's another one who talks about when she goes to live with her aunt and uncle, and how she talks about how they're physically affectionate with each other and how she's not used to that. She's like, well, they're showing me how to be a family. So like, and you know, at the end of the movie, you see her and the Elliot, I think is the kid's name. They, yes, you know, get an apartment, and that's it. But it's like, I was like deeply affected by every storyline in this movie.
Yes.
Like, I don't know if there was one that affected me more than the other. I thought they all, like, complemented each other in really interesting ways. Like, I'm not surprised this movie was nominated for an Academy Award for Best Documentary. And it was Bing Liu's, like, first documentary feature. I think it lost to Free Solo, which was about, like, rock climbing or some shit. But
You know what other shot was really affecting to me, and I wondered if I was just reading into it or not. I don't think I was, but I thought it was really a really interesting shot where Nina has Elliot out at the park and she's got a skateboard for him. And yes, he like, you know, stands on it, but then he jumps off it and runs and just goes and plays and leaves the skateboard behind. And I was like, okay, not, you know, like that's the way that she knows how to make a connection. And he might not be very interested in skateboarding, and maybe that would be better for him, or maybe, you know, yeah. I don't know. But it was...
And if you're Bing and you're filming that, you're going to be like, that's going in the movie.
Yep. Right. Yeah.
Although I saw an interview where he said he shot like something like 235 days on this movie, which is an insane
That's a lot. Footage. Yeah.
Like, that's not, I mean, it's not 235 hours. Like, I made a documentary where I had 235 hours of footage.
Right.
He shot for 235 days.
I think it's really interesting because, you know, you can set out, when you're filming skateboarding, you're basically what you're trying to accomplish is about what, you know, a standard is like 3 minutes of footage. Or, you know, maybe 15 minutes of footage of a group of people skateboarding. But as it turns into something else, the camera's always there. You know, you like it is interesting that in the last maybe 20 years, because when I was a kid, if we could get our hands on a camcorder, we absolutely went out and filmed ourselves skateboarding. But 90% of the skateboarding that we did was just without a camp, you know, no camera running, just out skateboarding. But as the equipment got more available and more, you know, and digitized and easier to come by, you always have a camera and it's always rolling. And it is interesting that all of a sudden you start to notice a narrative forming, but he probably already had 25 days worth of footage of just him skateboarding with his friends, you know?
Yeah, I think he had that. And like I said, I think he started out just making a movie about skateboarders talking about their lives. I think he thought right. That was going to be the movie. And usually when you're working on a documentary, at least in my experience, it's like you start out doing one thing and then the film reveals itself.
Right. The best documentaries do that. Yes.
I think it's almost like when you start making a documentary, it's almost like you're taking a leap of faith. That's what's going to happen. And
right.
Sometimes that works out and sometimes it doesn't. So, and you know, I've had experiences where it hasn't and the, like those movies have fallen apart.
Right.
But you know, Bingley was really smart about, you know, seeing what this movie could, like what this movie should be.
Right. Well, that's a question I have for you then is like, how hard is it? It must be hard. It's like, if you start out thinking you're making one kind of movie, do you think it's hard to kind of like write yourself with the fact that the movie that you set out to make isn't necessarily the movie you're making? Because my favorite documentaries are always that. They start out making a documentary like the, you know, Dig is a perfect example. The documentary they were making was about two up and coming bands. They did not realize that they were making a documentary about fucking insane people, you know?
Yeah. Or The King of Kong. They started out just making a movie about competitive video game players in general.
Right. Right. Right.
The story here is the Donkey Kong people. I think if you're good, then you know to roll with that.
Right.
You know to pivot. And I think if you're not good, then you get stuck in sort of a rigid, that's not the movie I'm making.
Right, right. Because it's almost like a second leap of faith, right? The first leap of faith is I'm going to make a documentary. The second one is just, okay, I'm going to follow where the story goes versus where I want it to go.
That's why I think, especially if you're doing something verite, it's tough because you don't know how it's going to go.
Right.
And it could go in a way that lends itself to a really compelling narrative, or it could. I feel like if it goes the way you think it's going to go, that's like the worst possible scenario because it's going to go the way the audience thinks it's going to go too. You know, I'm not really talking about like historical documentaries where it's like, which I've also made, where it's like there was a band and here's the people in the band talking about the band and why the band was important and everyone loves the band. And then there's some footage and some stuff like that's easier than the leap of faith style documentary, I think.
Right.
Cause I've set sail on a couple of those and like, they haven't, sometimes they don't go the way you want.
Right.
Or, you know, sometimes the subject is like, I don't want to do this anymore. It can be tough. Yeah, I don't want to belabor the point, but Minding the Gap is fucking great.
I'm going to be honest with you, Kevin. When I was getting ready to start, you know, to log on and record this, I was like, am I going to start weeping in the middle of the podcast? It really affected me in a way. And I think the way that you described it was just right, where it's like it just – The way that everything was portrayed and the way it all played out was just it was like constantly surprising and really, really heartbreaking. I was so affected by Kier and his story. I was just like, man, that kid is like, dude, he's in so much pain and he's trying so hard to just like figure it out, you know? I wish him the best. Is there any kind of follow-up? Do we know where these cats are these days? Do we?
I'm sure you could do some Googling, and at the end of the film, there's kind of a what happened to them montage. I was really happy that She's the Dog made the Where Then Now montage, because you're like, man, Zach abandons his fucking dog in his apartment after he just skips town.
Oh, that's right, with the poop on the floor and everything.
So it was nice to see that She's the Dog had a happy ending. But I'm sure you could like cyber stalk their Facebook pages or something like that, I don't know, but I genuinely loved this movie. And I rarely say that about the movies we cover on this
Well,
podcast.
we've it's it, it is funny, Kevin. You know, I the hook for this podcast is I love it so much, but man, that means we've watched some fucking stinkeroos of movies. Not a lot of crossover between good films and skateboarding films, and this one knocked me on my ass. I thought it was great.
Thank you for listening. Our website is gleamingthetube.net. We're on Facebook at Gleaming the Tube, and our email is gleamingpod@gmail.com. Production assistance by Liam Gray. Music by Kissing Contest. Skateboarding is not a crime.